Good afternoon, everyone. It is 2 o'clock p.m. on Wednesday, June 25th, 2025. I would like to call the Ponce-Inlet Town Council special meeting to order. I would ask that everyone please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show that all council members are present and in council chambers. Agenda item 4, the topic is the Town of Ponce-Inlet Stormwater Utility Feasibility Study presented by Raftellis Financial Consultants, Inc. Mike?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'd like to introduce Christina Conchilla with Raftellis. As council may remember, we have hired their firm under a continuing services contract. They're also the ones that did our water utility rate study previously. Before I begin, I'd just like to give a little bit of background about why we're here. After the presentation, then I may ask some questions of the consultant before you open it up to the public, and of course after the council has its questions, and then after that we'll have some questions for the council. With that, I'll go ahead and get started here. The council may remember this idea of a utility has a very long history. We are the only jurisdiction in Volusia County that does not have a stormwater utility. The purpose of doing this is to create a dedicated source of revenue to fund maintenance, operations, and anything else that the council wishes to include in there. If you put this as we have it right now, the general fund is one big pot of money, and that is always subject to competing interests, depending on the year. And so creating this is you have this dedicated source, it's always there, and it's ready for you when you need it. The town last attempted to do this back in 2008. We went through the same process that we've done now, creating a study to analyze what the fee should be. It's very interesting reading the meeting minutes from that time, because we were in the same boat as we are now. The council was looking for they're seeing declining gas tax revenue. They're seeing the need to find alternate source of revenue, given that even at that time, our 70% came from ad valorem taxes. There was also the need to fund continued infrastructure maintenance. So nothing has changed since then. However, the ordinance at that time had failed on second reading due to lack of a second. The motion to approve. The reason folks gave at that time was they wanted to keep it in the general fund because then they could deduct it from their taxes, their federal income taxes. That was the reason. That time, though, they were looking at something like an annual bill of $84, so I'm not sure what real benefit that would have had, but in any case, that was the reason given at that time. Of course, everyone remembers in 2022 we had Hurricanes Ian and Nicole, and that was a huge wake-up call for us. And then that's when this council started discussing the need to have the source of revenue and make sure that our stormwater was maintained. In 2023, the council was beginning those discussions. The ESAB recommended funding the stormwater utility study in the fiscal year 23-24 budget. In 2024, the council officially set the goal for the Public Works Department to complete this study and have it implemented. And then Raftellis started beginning the study. And then here we are in 2025. We have the draft study prepared. This is a feasibility study. So this is really just to give the council a flavor of where we are to this point. And then the consultant will go over the next steps after this. So with that, I'd like to turn this over to Christina, and she is going to be presenting this virtually to us today. Is she muted? Christina, are you muted? Okay, we just had her up a minute ago. Okay, bear with us.
Christina, can you hear us?
Oh, we can. Okay, let's see.
Not sure what happened.
She can hear us.
All right. Try it again.
Sorry about this, folks. Just bear with us.
All right. The only thing I could think of is going to have to leave and come back.
Hey, Bill. I'll be happy to talk if y'all need me to talk. Joseph, I'll be happy to talk if y'all need me to fill in. I don't think Lois will let me do that.
If I can, is while Randy is working on this, there were some questions that we should all have in our mind as this unfolds, and that is, are we all still in agreement that we wish to go the route of a dedicated revenue source for stormwater improvements rather than continuing through our ad valorem? And do we understand what the funds will be used for? The cost of running this dedicated revenue source and who's responsible for all aspects of this new revenue source. So those should be things that are in your mind and probably are, but we'll be circling back to all of that once the presentation is done.
Yeah, if I could just reiterate those, some of the questions that we want to ask after this is all done is, do you have any general questions or concerns with this? Do you have one of the things we're going to be talking about is how this bill is assessed. Is it done as a non-ad valorem assessment on your annual tax bill, or is it done as a monthly utility bill just like you get with your water and sewer? You will see in this presentation some alternatives about a proposed rate and what that gets you, and then just kind of we want to gauge your comfort level with all of these things before presenting or proceeding forward. Also, a question is, what kind of outreach you want us to provide to the public to get them aware of this for future meetings. And then ultimately, you know, we would like your blessing to proceed one way or the other with this, because there are funding implications for next year with the second phase of this. So I will also say that the way this is supposed to work is that you have the certain percentage of money that's now funded through ad valorem taxes, which is based on a person's property value. What this does is replace it with a method that's based on land use instead, and then the corresponding impervious area that comes with that. That's what generates the stormwater runoff, and that's what generates the need to have ponds, et cetera, things like that. So with this method, everyone pays the same. It's not based on property value. And whatever rate is discussed, that's going to generate a certain amount, and then that will be used to offset the ad valorem taxes. So you would see a corresponding decrease in the millage rate. Another nice thing about this system, the way it's set up, is that you can potentially get credits for that. If you live in a neighborhood that already has a modern stormwater system, there's not as much of a need because you're already taking care of a portion of that yourself. And so there's a corresponding decrease in the amount that you would pay each month or year based on that. That's what would be calculated as part of the phase two if we go to that.
Mayor, can I ask one question? And again, Michael's already touched on it, but can you reiterate again why this was voted down or no second. And the part I wanted to allude to was the tax deduction. And that's one of my general questions.
Yeah, the federal tax rate structures were a little bit different than they are now, with the standard deduction being so much higher, today than it was back then. The concern then was they wanted whatever they had to pay in property taxes, they would then get to deduct off their federal income tax bill. Okay. And ultimately, they decided they wanted to keep paying it through property taxes rather than this, so they could get that extra little bit of deduction.
So we were looking at $80-something dollars a year. I mean, that doesn't equate, in my opinion, to a whole lot. Is that correct? Or
That's what was being proposed. Is about, I believe, is $84 a year at that time.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, when all else fails, reboot. And that's what we're going to do. All right, we're gonna do this a little bit differently. We're gonna have her just call in, and then we have the presentation, the slides, and we can forward them for her instead of her doing it. So let's just do that.
Hi, Christine. Are you able to hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yay.
We can hear you.
Woohoo! Yeah. Okay. Let me reshare. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Opportunity to speak with you all. And thank you for your patience. Okay, can everybody also see the presentation?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, and thank you to Mike for the introduction. As he mentioned, I'm Christina Conchilla. I work in the Stormwater Consulting Division of Raftellis. And we have been working for the past year on this stormwater feasibility study. Feedback and echo on my end. It may be helpful while I'm talking for you all to mute. And then
is everybody muted?
Thank you. Okay. If you have any questions, feel free to come off mute and, of course, interrupt me at any time with any questions you might have. But with that being said, I'm going to dive in. So Mike gave a pretty good introduction to what a stormwater utility is, but I'll give a where, since you've been pondering this for quite some time. But it would be an enterprise fund that would provide stable, dedicated, and equitable source of funding for stormwater only. So the funds in this fund would only go towards stormwater. And that would be going towards meeting the state and federal regulatory requirements. And I'll go over sort of what those are in detail in a little bit later. The operation and maintenance of your stormwater system. It goes towards improving water quality, a big one, reducing some flooding, and of course, repairing and replacing aging infrastructure. This is a big one as well, as I'm sure you all are aware. It's always better and preferred to proactively repair and replace your infrastructure as opposed to sort of repairing it reactively once it's already failed. It's going to be a much cheaper option for you all. So having a dedicated stormwater fund allows you to plan and more proactively replace your aging infrastructure. With that being said, our first decision when looking at stormwater utilities is how are we going to bill for stormwater utilities? Unlike water and sewer utilities, you know, there is no meter that reads how much stormwater is generated by a property. So with that being said, impervious area really is the industry standard for stormwater utility rate structures. And that is because it bears what we call a rational nexus between, the demand that is placed on your system and the property. So in essence, the more impervious surface that's on a property, the more stormwater runs off of that property and enters your system and places a demand on your system. According to the Florida Stormwater Association, just over 70% of stormwater utilities in Florida use impervious area-based rate structures. The percentage is actually larger nationwide. It's around 80% of utilities across the nation use impervious surface as their as the basis for their fee. So here is just a basic definition of impervious area. It's obviously hard surfaces that don't allow for infiltration of stormwater. So things like rooftops, driveways, patios, sidewalks, parking lots, compacted gravel. So we're not talking landscaping gravel, but things that have been compacted and parked on and driven on frequently. Swimming pool water is excluded. The patio or a hard surface around the pool would be included, but the pool water itself is not. Open graded aggregate is not included either. And that is things around like electric power stations. So that is how we define impervious area for purposes of this study. And then the next step is to divide the properties within the town boundaries up into customer classes. So here are the main customer classes, and we use the Volusia County property appraiser data to classify parcels into these categories. So the first big one is single family residential properties, then multifamily residential properties, think condominiums. Single family attached refers to townhomes. And then non-single family residential is sort of everything else. It's the catch-all for everything else. So your commercial, industrial, and institutional properties. And the reason that we sort of divide them up into these is because each of these are treated a little bit differently. They all have sort of slightly different impervious area characteristics, and so they're treated just a little bit differently. So the first one I mentioned, obviously, is single family residential properties. And that's single dwelling on a single lot, as shown here. And the reason this one is so important is because this particular customer class forms the basis of the billing unit, that impervious area-based billing unit, which I'll get into here in just a second. So we took a random sample of 400 single-family residential properties within the town, measured their impervious area. And we take that, and that forms the billing unit, determines the billing unit, which is called the equivalent residential unit, or ERU. So based on that sample, random sample of 400 properties, we calculated the median amount of impervious area, and then that becomes your equivalent residential unit, and everything else is billed based upon that amount of impervious area. And we use median instead of average because the median is less sensitive to outliers, meaning your really big homes and your really tiny homes could kind of sway an average value, but median is just that smack in the middle amount. And the 400 sample is because that's considered a statistically significant sample, meaning that we have 95% confidence in the value that we determined as your median amount of impervious area. Here is the distribution of that sample. So along the bottom, that's impervious area. And so this is sort of where all of those properties landed. And the median is here, right, 2,863 square feet. So we can leave that as is and calculate sort of everything else based off of that. Or another option is to round that. So a lot of communities like to round that value just for ease of customer communication. I will say that there is quite a what we call a tail on this distribution. meaning there are a good number of homes out here in the larger range. So with that being said, there are sort of two options for billing residential properties. The impervious area characteristics are fairly similar within this class compared to something like non-single family residential, for instance. So you can flat rate, meaning all of the residents in Ponce Inlet would be charged one ERU. They'll all charge the same across the board. And for the purposes of this analysis, that's what we did, since this was just the feasibility study. We're not implementing the utility at this point. We're just looking at sort of a preliminary rates. So that's one option. And then the secondary option is you could what we call tier, which was to place single-family residential properties into one of three tiers, like a low, medium, high, based upon their amount of impervious area. This can improve the equity in this class, but it can also increase administrative burden. And that's because you have to do a bunch of additional measurement to get the tiering. And you sort of have to keep up with the impervious area measurements on a more regular basis when you're tiering. So that's just something to consider if you elect to implement the utility in the next phase. But for purposes of this study, well, you're hearing me talking, we use one ERU. We assumed a flat rate for all residential properties, single-family residential properties. And then during this study, we estimated impervious area on the remainder of the properties using Volusia County data. So everything else is estimated. They had some tabular impervious area data that we were able to use. It is good for the purposes of this and developing a preliminary rate, but you would want to actually measure the impervious area on a map like this for purposes of billing in the next phase. And then for condominiums, we had to do some additional computation because the tabular data for the county was not quite as good for condominiums. As you may imagine, when we're measuring impervious area two-dimensionally like this, it's a very different value than if you added up condos that are going up six or seven stories. So we just had to use some floor data and things like that to make it be a more two-dimensional impervious area for purposes of condominiums. So here are the other customer classes that I mentioned. So for our purposes of this, again, for single-family attached or townhomes, they are a little bit different in that they oftentimes share a common area space that has impervious area, roadways, parking lots, and et cetera. So typically, we would measure the entire development and then sort of equally allocate ERUs amongst the townhomes. But again, for purposes of this analysis, we selected to just charge them one ERU, similar to the single-family detached residential. For non-single-family residential, typically what you would do is you would measure the impervious area and then divide it by that ERU value that I mentioned, that 2,800-ish square feet of value. But for purposes of this analysis, again, we used tabular Volusia County data. We took the total impervious area in the county data and divided it by that ERU value, and that gives you a specific billing unit for that property. For multifamily residential, your condominiums, we do the same thing. We take the total amount of impervious area, we divide it by that ERU value to calculate the total number of ERUs for that property, but then we further allocate it to each of the condominium dwelling units. So that's a little bit of a different next step for the multifamily residential. Any questions? I know I'm throwing a lot at you. Okay, so with that being said, go ahead.
I do have one question.
Sure.
Some of the properties, townhomes or condominiums in Ponce Inlet, and Michael, you can help me with the verbiage on this, but some of them have a stormwater in-ground water drainage system that goes around their entire property, and that was part of the design for the building phase. Has that been considered at all, or would there be consideration for that?
That is planned as a consideration for the next phase, absolutely. We would definitely recommend implementing a credit program, so a reduction on the fee for those properties, absolutely. That is very common and typical. We wouldn't typically recommend a 100% reduction in the fee, but we would look at some reduction in the fee, certainly for people who have built private stormwater control devices and are operating and maintaining those according to their permit. Yes.
Well, let me piggyback a little bit on the outliers in this town, because we have several large single family lots that have impervious areas, but there isn't any water leaving those lots. It's contained on the lot itself. We have a few other lots where the impervious area drains into the lot. In fact, some of the street storm water drains into those lots because they're lower than the lot. So we've got a few examples of outliers that don't conform to your basic premise when you're doing this study.
Yes. And I think we would have to, you know, anytime you're implementing a utility, there's always going to be, you know, properties that are a little bit different. And so we always recommend having a good appeals and abatement process for folks like that, so that they can have a method to apply and say, you know, I only have X, you know, I'm actually treating city or town stormwater, right? So it's flowing onto my property. Yeah, things like that. So that we always recommend that, so that these special cases can get some reduction off their bill. That would be a little bit different than necessarily getting a credit for having a, you know, stormwater treatment device. But there are going to be special cases. So we always recommend sort of having an appeals and abatement process.
And Christina, I have a question, if you know the answer to this. For the other municipalities that you work with, do most choose the flat rate or tier? Or do you know what is going on in Volusia County, or,
It is extremely variable. Not many places in Florida are tiering, honestly. Okay. We are converting some to tiering. You know, Florida was the first state really in the country to start implementing utilities in the 90s. I don't know specifically how many in Volusia County exactly have tiers. I can look that up, but I don't have that right off of the top of my head. But it's not very many in Florida as a whole, because we're trying to move St. Augustine Beach into tiering, and I've looked up and researched just tiering in Florida in general, and it's not as common as you might think.
Okay, thank you. That would be what I would expect. Okay, thank you. Any other questions right here, right now? No? Okay. Thank you, Christine. I guess you can continue.
You're so welcome. Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm going to get back to where I was. Okay. So with that being said, all those sort of measurements and calculations were done to develop an estimated units of service. And units of service just means the total number of billing units to work with. This is part of the equation for calculating the rate. So this is the denominator in the equation for calculating the rate. So we take the total revenue that the town needs, and then we would divide it by the number of units of service. And that's how we calculate our rate. So the total number of ERUs estimated is just over 1,700. This, of course, in the next phase would be refined by measurement. So it could certainly go up from the tabular data that we're using now. So that's just something to keep in mind. Oh, and like I said, this is the second part of the equation, so we're going to look at the revenue requirements. So again, this is talking about what does it fund, your regulatory requirements, the O&M, CIP, depending on the funding level, and then it can also fund some reserves. So the regulatory requirements. The Clean Water Act has a piece and a component in it called the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. Sometimes you can hear that referred to as NPDES or NPDES. Municipal Separate Storm Sewer System, MS4 permit, which the town is subject to. This is the driver for many of your program and revenue needs. It is an unfunded federal mandate, meaning, you know, the federal government requires you to do it, but has not provided any funding to do it. It requires the town to implement, track, and report on 6 minimum control measures, which are shown on the right. It requires an annual report. It requires compliance. And there are some new additional requirements forthcoming. These requirements are getting ever more stringent, seemingly. So this is a big piece of what is required. And with that, it also requires operation and maintenance of your system. So I've listed out here, I won't read all of this piece by piece, but all the things that the town is required to inspect, clean, and maintain, street sweeping, pollution prevention. It requires you to develop a large map of your system, public cleanup events, public education and outreach, controls during construction. It requires dedicated staff. And then any additional MPDS and GIS needs you may have, or other kind of computer software, can all be sort of included in this. So we spent some time with town staff, sort of walking line item by line item through the budget, and looking at sort of how to extract what is being spent on stormwater currently out of existing budget that is, as Mike mentioned, being now funded through the general fund. So we extracted those personnel, their time, their hours, other things, contracted services, and put all of those together along with some capital expenditures. For capital expenditures, we looked at sort of the average of what has been spent over the last several years on capital stormwater funding and plugged that into the revenue requirements as well. And here, this graph shows in blue, the bright blue on the left is the total revenue requirements. That includes the capital expenditures, all your operation and maintenance of your stormwater system, and then a reserve fund. So that total, which we call it full funding by the fee, is just over $368,000. And this is for FY26. Then we looked at an intermediate funding option, which would be all the operation and maintenance, 50% of previous capital expenditures and all reserves. That came out at just over $324,000. And then we looked at a low funding option, which would just be funding the operation and maintenance of the system. And that came out just over $241,000. So those are sort of the three funding options that we looked at. Funding through the fee, through the enterprise fund. And so this is the O&M only, that lower funding option spread across a 5-year period. And the increases, the very slight increases, are escalation. Obviously, you know, personnel, so you can see it's divided into personnel and then just operating. So we apply a 3% escalation factor. Most places increase, you know, salaries around that amount every year. So that's what why it goes up slightly every year. And so we calculated a preliminary monthly rate for fiscal year 26 under all three of those scenarios: the full funding, the partial, and the partial low. So it's ranging between $18 and $12 per month. And I think you asked about sort of what some other communities are doing. And here are the lighter blue on the right are the three options that we're looking at. The black line is impervious area per ERU. So you can see the ERU in communities is really variable, which can sort of be a large factor in the rate. Some of these were established 20 plus years ago and have never been updated. A lot of them were established when industry standards were very different. When utilities were first started, there wasn't particularly an industry standard, and in many cases, when they were calculating their ERU, they included multifamily residential into that calculation, and that has since faced quite a bit of legal challenge in the state of Florida, so we no longer recommend that as an industry standard. As you may imagine, the impervious area characteristics of multifamily properties and single-family properties are incredibly different, so I think that's a smart thing that it's moved away from that. But so that has sort of artificially lowered some of these. But it's interesting, programs, how much people are funding and what they're funding, the level of service and their level of funding can be very different. So it's really hard to make an apples to apples comparison on rates. But we always feel it's important to show and be transparent with sort of what other people are doing. So then the next thing is that we wanted to look at sort of two distinct billing methodologies that we think are good options for the town. The first is a non-ad valorem special assessment billing methodology. So this would be an annual fee on the Volusia County tax bill. This methodology has the highest collection rates across the state. Many, many, many communities in Florida do this. It is much easier to administer because you have to imagine when we're measuring impervious area, we're measuring it on a parcel, so we call it a parcel-based fee. This is very different, right, than a meter-based fee. So it's very easy to take your sort of parcel impervious area data and bill it to a parcel. When you have to bill it to a utility, there's some interesting things sometimes with meters because things are not always master metered, or there can be 4 or 5 meters on a property. So trying to match utility bills to parcel bills is can be a little bit tricky. This would be like an annual revenue rather than necessarily a monthly or a quarterly revenue. And under this billing methodology, the state regulations require every property within that's developed that has impervious area to be billed. So it requires every property to be assessed in the same way, in this case, impervious area. So anything with impervious area, whether it's owned by the town or the state, would have to receive a bill. I particularly think this is a great methodology in Florida because there is such a seasonally fluctuating population. When you include stormwater bills on an existing utility bill like water and sewer, and someone leaves for 6 months and turns off their water and sewer bill or turns off their water and sewer meter for 6 months, you're then forced to either send them a separate new type of bill called, we call it a stormwater only bill. So that's sort of, you'll have to shift whenever that happens, which can be quite an administrative burden. So that can just be really challenging when that's one thing to think about with existing utility billing. Or if you don't send a stormwater only bill, you would lose revenue during those months where the water and sewer was off. So this is just when your population is somewhat seasonally fluctuating, this is a really good option. It does have a pretty strict timeline, though, and this is by Florida statute. You would have to pass a resolution of intent prior to January 1st of next year. There is a lot of coordination with the county. They need a draft roll for the TRIM notice. You have to have a public hearing in September to approve the roll, and then the final assessment roll has to go to the county by September 15th. So there is a lot of requirements there, but again, very good collection rates for revenue. But then the other option is to include it on the town's water and sewer bill. It still has pretty high collection rates because there obviously is some enforcement mechanism with the threat of water shutoff. You would get monthly revenue instead of sort of annual. And again, I say here that a seasonal or large renter population can affect the revenue. And it is a little bit harder to administer because you have to do the parcel to account matching process. But under this process, you could exempt the town properties or other properties from the bill, should you choose. Okay, so here are sort of the next steps. I know there were some questions. So you do see we do have credit program development in here. We would do the measurements of impervious area, finalize those units, do a final rate calculation. Obviously, an ordinance would need to be brought in front of you for review and approval, public outreach, very large, important thing is, you know, get the public to buy into this and the importance of the utility and the need for all the things that we've talked about, improve water quality, reduce flooding, infrastructure, you know, those are important things. And then the decision about how you wanted to bill, which I briefly reviewed with you. Okay. Time for questions.
Mayor, if you don't mind, I'd like to just go ahead and ask one, and that's all I'm going to have at this point. Yeah, Christina, for the non-ad valorem assessments, once it's been set up, is a public hearing required every year thereafter?
That's a good question.
If the fee stays the same, or is it only needed if the fee changes?
It is, yeah, so it's really only needed if the fee changes. And what we recommend, and what a lot of places do is because we do want to have slight increases for those escalation factors that I mentioned, we do want to set like a range. So this is just an example. This is not your numbers, but so we could say we approve between in the ordinance or as a resolution between, you know, $100 a year and $120 a year. Something, you know, you would recommend a range for a 5-year period, since we're looking at sort of a 5-year period. And that way, during that first public hearing, you would approve that range. And so that way, you could increase rates just within that range without having to have another public hearing. This regulations really only require it the first time and when you do rate increases outside of that original range. So
I think that's similar what your company recommended to us and what we wound up adopting for the water utility rates. It's like over a 5-year period with a certain rate calculated per year.
Yeah. Makes it easier on everyone. And of course, you don't have to increase to the maximum level. You could, you know, but it just does give you the flexibility.
Christina, is in your experience, the Florida legislature sometimes likes to impose additional requirements on stormwater management and the like. Has your experience been that it's had a big impact upon the rate? By way of example, the bill that didn't pass was the one where I think they expected us to clean the stormwater drains so much more than what I think was even recommended. But what is your experience with that, and also with anything to do with enterprise funds where sometimes the legislature would like to cap increases?
I think our experience is they haven't been too successful in capping.
Okay, good.
rate increases that I've seen anywhere. So I don't expect that to happen. But yeah, I mean, you're right. It is hard. I know that the Cycle 5 MS4 requirements are quite cumbersome compared to at least the draft that I've seen compared to what has come previously before. But I think they're willing to work with most communities to make those shifts over time so as to not put a large burden on their rate requirements. That's what I've seen in most places.
Okay, that is good to know. Thank you. That was very helpful for me. Thank you. Are there questions up here, Joe or Skip? Skip, Joe?
If we're looking at a complex that when it was originally designed comprehended the need for stormwater control. Does that particular subdivision have any positive impact on things?
You mean, does it reduce the demand on your system?
Yes, because it was when it was built out, it was they comprehended a very, very large retention basin with sloping property from A1A down to Peninsula, and the piping system then runs out into the river. So there are three of those units in that particular subdivision.
Yes, and that's why we would want to give them a credit from a reduction in their fee, because they are reducing the demand on your system. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, and I'll have a general statement first, but I had a conversation today with Matt Reinhart. I was at the TPO meeting, and I mentioned to Matt that we were having this meeting this afternoon. And I said, Matt, I think we're the only municipality in Volusia County that does not have stormwater utility fees. And he said, you've got to be kidding me. I said, no. But I said, we're working on it. But I want to make that as a general statement, because it is absolutely 100% true that we do not. If you could pull up slide 18, is that
absolutely
possible?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ooh, I went the wrong direction. Didn't like the direction I was going.
Got it. Oh, that's an S20.
Hold on, I'm getting there. I'm getting there, sorry.
Okay.
Goodness, I don't like it. There we go. This is the one you're looking at.
Okay.
Right?
I'm going to address the easy one first. So with the capital expenditures, and Michael, you know where I'm going with this, the exfiltration system that we currently have budgeted in our CapEx at 120, if this goes through, that I know the answer by making sure, that pulls that 120 out of our 25-26 budget, correct?
Well, it would depend on the funding option you selected. So this particular one is just O&M.
Okay. The reason I asked the question, because that was an example that was in this packet. So the way I look at it, if we implement this, would that offset the 120?
Yeah, based on the timing, it would not, only because it takes so long to get this once you do the notification that we got to go through the ordinances and thing. I'm thinking if we did this, and help me out with this, Christina, I mean, the earliest we would be able to do this, like get this set up, would be, you know, end of next fiscal year, something like that. What would you suggest?
Yes. So the bills would go out to folks next fall. So you would start to receive revenue in the year, kind of almost the next fiscal year, depending on how people pay. But it would likely be January of 27.
Yeah.
So before you start receiving revenue.
Particular project, but future projects.
Okay. So this was an example, basically, not this could happen if you do this, correct?
Yeah, that was an example that
okay,
was used.
I'm good. Mm-hmm. So the next question pertaining to this slide, and I swear I saw something in here, but I can't find it, so that's probably I didn't see it. But where it states that the town's Department of Public Works is responsible for stormwater operations and related maintenance. However, the Building and Code Enforcement Division also completes various tasks that are appropriate to the funding with the Stormwater Fund. So if we implement this, will there be a percentage of our salaries to our public works department that future years, now that it can't happen this year, but 26-27, we should see a reduction of our operating budget because part of their salaries would be covered by this, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. Do we know what percentage that might be? Just general question. Don't just say no if you don't.
No. Okay. But I'll get it to you after this. It's in the financial model because we pulled it by percentage. So I can certainly get
okay.
It to
that's
you,
fine. I didn't know the majority. You know, we would have to come up with some kind of formula to say 25% of their time is dedicated to this or whatever. Okay, so I'm leading to somewhere.
But you can see here in blue. So it's you can see the total dollar amount. I don't know the percentage, but we'll. So the blue is personnel here.
Right.
So it's looks like it's right around 125,000 pulled out.
And I think also it's probably based on each municipality and how we perform our task is my
that's correct.
Not a general flat rate. Okay. So getting through that part of it to get to this, I'm all for this, and the reason being, I do see it as a savings for us once we implement it and it goes into effect, because again, projects like the filtration, the exfiltration system would be covered under this. Also, too, it helps reduce our operating cost at our public works because it's generated through this additional fund. So it's moving, in my opinion, it's moving taxes from the general fund that our residents are being taxed to a monthly or yearly fee, but all that money is dedicated to doing what we all want, and that's protect mm-hmm. our town in stormwater. So
that's correct.
Let me see if I had anything else, and I promise I'll let you go. Tier versus flat rate, you know, I think that's debatable, and I think Bill's getting ready to touch on that. one other question, though, Michael, and I probably could be wrong here, but if a resident goes out of town, a snowbird goes out of Ponce Inlet, how often do we shut the water off? I mean, I don't see that as a normal thing. Maybe I could be wrong, but, you know, the sewer bill, the water bill, does it happen?
It happens sometimes, but it's just repeated non-payment. I mean, that's kind of a drastic measure, but it basically people are refusing to pay.
Right, but we don't, as a town, the way my ears understood the presentation, as a town, resident Skip and Jane go out of town for 6 months. I don't come into the public works and say, hey, shut my water off for 6 months and I'll turn it back on. We still get a monthly bill, whether it's zero or $2. Is that correct?
I believe so. You want to, yes. Jerry
okay,
says yes.
Good. So okay. You see where I'm going with that? Because when I heard that part, it surprised me. So we don't do that, so we don't need to take that in consideration, in my opinion. Okay, thank you.
I think the point she was trying to make is that if you have you can do that when someone has a water utility bill. You know, if they don't pay, that's a method of last resort. You can just shut off the water.
Right.
If it's an undeveloped property, there's nothing to shut off.
Right.
But they still would need to pay, you know, based on the calculation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But we do not have that many residents coming in and saying, I'm going out of town for X amount of days, turn off my water, and they would not receive a bill. So they get bills every month, in my opinion, regardless, correct? Okay.
Yeah, I can give you Lighthouse Village as an example. After that major flood that we had years ago, and we got that 100-some-odd thousand dollars of gallons of water used, we actually got a document change to where everybody has to shut off their water when they're not there. We know they're going to get the minimum bill. We do it on purpose because we've had occasions where people have not beforehand not shut off their water. Their water heater goes, the water's running, and it floods the house next door. So we do. I mean,
we still get a bill
for them. Oh,
exactly.
Yeah, there's no question. And we have that $2,000 gallon minimum. But we don't come anywhere close to using that number of gallons a month unless during the summer. But, yeah, we actually put that in because of the concern of the attached next-door neighbor of what can happen. So I get a list of if someone forgot, they'll actually call me and I'll go shut off their water for them. It's a regular thing. We know, personally, we know we need this. We desperately need this, and one of the reasons is we saw what happened in 2022 and the damage done to so many homes because we were assuming someone else was really keeping it up. So we know we need it. And we also know that hopefully with doing this correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, Christina, that if we do it right, that we will have less, hopefully, damage to residences and other properties because after listening to what I heard today, we have no idea if FEMA is going to be around in the next couple of years to assist us in any way. I just heard that we're going to be giving money to build alligator Alcatraz in Miami instead of using the money for FEMA. Now, I don't know if it's a fact or fiction, but that's what I got hit with today. So I know we have to do something to save people's homes. That's an automatic.
That's a very good point about FEMA. Yeah, it just seems like it's very up in the air right now. But it's a very good selling point. Yeah, you're going to want the money for yourself. You know, and so that's, you know, it's up to you all. But, you know, these higher full and partial intermediate do allow, you know, for more capital expenditures. I know the rate is higher, but you will have money for larger capital projects. You will have a reserve, which is sort of a rainy day fund, if you will, for, you know, setting aside for emergency repairs and stuff. So it's really a policy decision for you all.
I think so. And I think the important part is that if it wasn't for our public works and our fire department and some other departments working together, gosh only knows what we would have looked like in 2022 after all the damage that was done. I mean, bless the employees of Ponce Inlet. And as Kip said, the money's going to be reverted from their salaries over to another fund, so we're actually going to save money on our overall budget. I look at
That's right.
The other thing, we were talking about the tiering and the flat rate, the high, medium, and low. I think we really need to look at that, because I think you said a lot prefer the flat rate, if I understood you correctly. I'm looking at, you know, someplace where I am, and I wonder if the flat rate is appropriate for attached townhouses compared to some other one. So I think we can look at that when we get to that. And the other thing I looked at is, real quick, I put that 18, 16, and 12 in, and I think it's 216, 192, and 144. We're not talking a significant number per year. When you put all that together, and if that will save a home in Ponce Inlet, because let's be honest about it, we have three storm drains, and if it wasn't for public works, those storm drains would probably be filled in now with soot and debris, because it wasn't kept up, because once the developer finishes, you think that's the end of it, but we saw what happened. Especially what happened to the home on Kelly B, and the 4 foot of water they had from the drainage thing that was there in their house that literally destroyed the home. So anything that we could do, and I think thank you for what you said, because you really hit the nail on the head on the things that we need to do for this town and public works and what they've done. But that's it.
Thank you, Bill. Gary?
Well, just a comment along with what everybody else is saying. It is a mistake to shut your water off for a long period of time, because all of your water traps die out. Then you've got sewer gases that can come up the other side, and you got the toads that can get in your place. You do not want to shut your water off for any great length of time.
I am
fully in agreement with you, but you would be surprised at how many communities we work with that have lost tremendous amounts of revenue because they have people who shut off water for months at a time, and they have no way to bill them for stormwater. So you all are smart to tell people, you know, like to send a minimum bill. They don't. Some places don't have base charges. So it's very smart to do base charges and make sure that everybody's getting a minimum monthly bill, even if they're gone. Because, like, there's just a lot of places in Florida that don't do that. You would be surprised.
Christina, thank you so much. And I want to share again with the council just how timely, on top of everything else, you know that we do have a countywide subcommittee on stormwater management and flooding. And that was created under the roundtable of Volusia elected officials, and that's the one that's co-chaired by Jake Johansson, who's very involved with flooding issues, and Nancy Miller. What's happening is that we're really pulling a lot of data and a lot of information that will be beneficial on top of this, because we don't have a roadmap, the town of Ponce Inlet, but Ben Bartlett of our public works in Volusia County is putting together and asking for data from everybody so we know who is responsible for what stormwater drain. Mm-hmm. So this is so timely. It's so appropriate. We do have some decisions that need to be made, obviously. Christina, thank you for laying everything out the way you did. And I want to be appropriate time-wise of when to open it to the public, because I suspect there's some questions and all. But, Mike, do you have any other questions of Christina or any other council member before I open it?
No, there'll be some things I'll be asking you after the public comment.
After public comment. You have questions for us? Okay. Anyone up here?
That's where I was going. So we'll have discussion after public discussion. Is that okay?
Yes, and okay. If we have discussion after public discussion, they come back up.
I'm good with that.
Okay, Thank you. So I'm looking at our public who's here. Steve, please come up.
Steve Field, Six Marzel. I think I understand that we're talking about having this complete by September 15th. That's only 2.5 months from now. I believe that's going to be very aggressive to be able to do that.
That would be next year.
2026 is what Mike was referencing.
I understand, but that's January 1st. But you said you had to have it in by September 15th, right?
Of next year.
Of next year.
Okay, that makes more sense. It just seems to me